Please remember to subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts and hit the bell so that you get notified every time we drop an episode and you don't miss out on anything.
If you're about to listen, please just subscribe. You can always, you know, come back and unsubscribe if you don't like it, but please subscribe first. Thank you.
Do it right now. Right now.
Hit the button.
Let's go. Hi guys, welcome to the Dirty Lie podcast. My name is Dez and I am here with
Maiwa Ido.
I'm here with Maiwa from Submerge, from Uncultured, from Culture Custodian, from Twitter, from Overnight Success. Maiwa, do you know I was thinking about my way here? You hate mushy stuff though.
Yeah, but go ahead.
You hate it, but I was like, you gave me my first press. Like written press. And you're the first person to interview me. And but what I remembered also is you put me on Summer Roach. So shout out to you.
We put you on Summer Roach. That was
Okay. It was a collective decision.
Yeah.
But you were like, Yeah, come. And I was super shy to ask. And you're like, no, we got you.
Well, people love that episode though.
Really?
Yeah. Because it's funny, I think I've listened back to it like recently, but it's like obviously I remember some of the things we were talking about that day. Like coming from a long line of, you know, stubborn women.
Yes. So thank you. But first time you're on the Dirty Lie podcast and we are talking.
This is not the first time I've been on the Dirty Lie podcast.
Really? Oh, because of your There was a time when we were recording in Maiwa's house and I was talking about something really serious. Yeah, we were talking about the plane hijack during the Biafran war. Yeah. And you just scream because Arsenal scored.
Time, please. It was last year.
Yes.
I think it was in January last year because it was the Arsenal United game.
Mm.
And I remember it because I think United were winning 2-1. And then Saka like scored that goal from outside the box. And I remember shouting, yeah, like, fuck off.
This is very respectful, but okay, so that was your first showing on this.
Yeah, that was my first showing on it. That was my first showing on that tonight.
But now you're here for real. And today we're going to talk about firewall. Is that, did I pronounce that right?
Is it firewall?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did I pronounce that
firewall,
right?
Firewall. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
because it's like firewall.
Yeah.
Yes. Smuggling. We're talking about smuggling in history, including Nigeria. I don't know if this is obvious, but I was inspired to do this by Fisayo Shoyombo's FIJ report on IBD Dende and the alleged...
Actually, I haven't read that story.
You should, but more so what you need to do is you need to watch the video that shows this guy shouting on a customs guy.
Was it a customs guy or a policeman?
He was shouting on a customs
guy. I saw that, but I didn't watch him.
Shouting on a customs officer, kind of like, how dare you stop my trucks.
But are you surprised?
No. But one thing that video does for me is it does a lot. But first of all, you see a whole bunch of normally trigger happy custom officers or police officers with their guns, etc., begging this guy, okay, like, calm down, please calm down. And another thing is he says, the IBD Dende says in the video that your boss, he basically says that one of the custom bosses just had his own shipment of smuggled rice
delivered
through that exact same border and his own four trucks went, so how dare you stop my own?
Fair enough.
And then you also see like a guy who was empowered to do his job or felt empowered to do his job by stopping a shipment being like, what did I do? He said he's going to kill me, what did I do? And you hear the fear in his voice. And like, for me, just that video captures a lot about Nigeria. Personally, I think it captures a lot. Like, even if all these alleged connections to like more powerful people do not turn out to be true, that video alone shows the porosity of our borders. Powerful people, like, this is like, you know, my Erisco report, right? Right. It's like Chioma alleged that they were begging him. Like she was sitting in the headquarters in police headquarters in Abuja and the police were begging him sorry now.
So for me, I think like, and this is again, because this is a history podcast, like it'll be very interesting to kind of obviously dig into the idea of like state capture. Because I was having a conversation with someone earlier today and we're talking about how a lot of things which kind of obviously had like noble intentions,
Yeah.
And how, like, Nigerian factor kind of just kills everything. So, because a lot of times these things is not because they're, it's not that they are bad ideas or stuff. It's just because it's the story of Nigeria where, and in the context of, like, obviously state capture, because I think it's something that you look at particularly in the last, like, maybe in the Fourth Republic, so post 99, you look at it, like, I think from, like, obviously the traditional rulers, that's one class of what you would say was maybe like traditional control, which have kind of like been
co-opted
into like the system. And then it's like, yeah, all these guys are just in bed with the politicians. And then you also look at like law enforcement and it's like at every level. So from Hush Puppy and Abba Kyari that year to like, yeah. So it's very, and it's crazy because obviously these are things, it's like when people tell you these things, it's different when it's like you read about it, but it's different when you literally are witnessing it happen in real time.
You know, I think that what you said is interesting, and I always look at the sad state of some traditional rulers, because I do think that we do have some, we still have some tier one kings, you know, and you can see from the behavior that they have respect to their throne themselves and that they command respect. But it's one of those things that you look back at when the British came. At the end of the day, like, the land, etc., was owned by the tribal rulers. Like, the role that they played before colonization, and in that, even the 1940s, and even like, in the colonization.
Shout out Kosoko.
And also the role they played in agitating for independence. Like, it's so crucial. And it's just weird to see the things that are becoming embedded in our culture and the things that we're losing. You know, a lot of times people are like, oh, you know, we should be more modern or whatever. But I'm just like, bro, the things that we're embedding right now in our culture is the worst things. And then the things we're losing some value that is actually important in terms of lineage, in terms of like traditional rulers having kind of a clear, like, it's crazy to me, right, that a governor can come and remove the emir of Kano.
You know, it's funny, as you were saying, that's literally what I was thinking. I was like, that, like, I was thinking, like, Ganduje being able to do that was, like, the instance where it was just, like, everyone involved should have kind of
taken a step back
to be like, yo, dude, like, you can't,
what
exactly are you trying to do here?
And then create multiple emirates. Like, it is, honestly, as somebody who just, and I don't even think I'm that conservative or whatever, but, like, I respect history and traditions and culture. Like, it is actually crazy to me that Ganduje, Gandollars.
Can you imagine?
Gandollars, the current APC national chairman, had the ability to remove SLS.
And that's the thing, because it's like, even if you don't, like, whether you agree with him or not, it's just like, there should be a point where... You know, when you're about to cross the Rubicon, it's like if you're about to jump down from the balcony, where someone's like, guy, behave yourself. Like, just come.
Like, that at some point, like, pull back.
Which I think is like, it's an obvious... So, the big elephant in the room, obviously, this happened under Buhari. And as someone... So, Buhari, obviously, being someone from the north who had, like... And who I would assume has an appreciation for, like, the traditional throne and, you know... I'm surprised, like, or before though, that, like, he never tried to be like, okay, yo, dude, like...
You know, one thing about Buhari for me is I cannot believe that. I can't put any complex thought on that man. Like, oh, this might not be good for the long term. I don't, like, God forgive me, but he's just not...
You're not wrong.
I can't see that Buhari has made a decision using both sides of his brain. Like... And the thing about it, one of the most, because, you know, they did talk about cabal, right, in Buhari's government. And I would listen to the statements that they would say, you know, El-Rufai, Lai Muhammad, etc. No matter what it was, even when, like, El-Rufai fell out with the cabal, especially when the notes were being printed. And when the words he was using, like, you know, they've, I don't know if he said, like, they had confused or misled the president.
Yeah,
like,
he implied they misled him, yeah.
But for me, I'm just like, I feel like every single member, everybody, even I think I need to release my episode with Galadima next, but everybody who I talked to who had some type of personal relationship with Buhari, I just feel like they thought, well, this nigga is not that bright. so I want to be the puppet master. Like, they all just felt like they could be the puppet master to a dull boy. Like, the way they talk about it is like the last person in the room is the person who's going to convince Buhari of something. And, you know, these things that they said he stood in, like anti-corruption or whatever, it just seems like he was unbothered. Like, I don't even, did anything bother him?
It's funny, the one thing I was going to say, I just remembered, was like, do you remember in 2019 when his brother-in-law was trying to run for governor? And the thing is, obviously, no one, like, isn't Buhari did not say this to me, but what I heard was that essentially Buhari was like, yo, that he knows what this guy had before he became president, and he knows what he has now.
You don't do
that. He essentially told APC, told everyone involved, that he's like, yo, guys, I don't care about anything that happens in this election, but that guy must lose.
Oh my.
And I'm like,
where was he running for governor?
Was it Adamawa? I don't remember precisely when. Yeah, but I think he didn't even, I mean, obviously he didn't even win like primaries or anything, because they killed that bad idea from the jump. But it was just like, oh, the fact that, you know, that guy, Buhari hated him that much that like he got a reaction out of him. He got a rise out of him. That, like,
if something is going to piss you off, it's going to be your in-laws. My one, that laugh was
at all.
Okay, let's go back to today's topic. So firewall comes from firewall. I don't know, firewall. Yoruba people, forgive me, because I'm not one of y'all. But it comes from, I believe, Second World War era in Nigeria, where we had food rationing.
Okay.
And so people were going hungry. And
as they do during war.
As they do during war. But, you know, our food, I spoke about this last week, in that our food was being rationed, and a lot of our food was also being taken to the British homeland under the cover of it's going to, like, British Empire, or to the soldiers, or to the war effort. But apparently some food was being diverted from Nigerian stomachs to British stomachs during the Second World War. And basically talks about people who would, like, drag, like, climb under, crawl under their fences, like, on their chests. Okay. Like, they would crawl under to try and get some of the food that was essentially being, like, smuggled out, like, the gari, not the gari, but you know what I'm saying? Like, any of the staple foods. We had, like, rationing, we had price controls. That's when you get that.
So basically, like, Buhari was in control.
But worse. But a little worse. Like, they actually was like, because a huge problem also is that first, I think over 120,000 Nigerian men went to serve, and a lot of women started. And this for our population boom. So this was significant.
Mm-hmm.
And
like, lots of surgeon points.
Really? Mm-hmm. And so you have women who are taking on a lot more roles, like, including, like, both farming and selling in the market. And they weren't able to make profits from it because the British literally said, this is how much you can charge.
Price controls.
Yeah. Like, they had severe price controls, but they also had, like, severe rationing. So there was a lot going on during that time. That's that whole rise of Herbert Macaulay and ETC. Anyways, that's where the term comes from. So today's facts. There's been a lot of lead up to today's facts, honestly. Mm-hmm. But I feel like people will enjoy our leading conversation before we get into the juicy juice. I don't think you're going to get this wrong.
You'd be surprised.
Is the problem. But it's good to have you. It's good to have you on here, friend. So facts. Fact one.
Okay.
There is a famed English smuggler, one of Britain's most notorious criminals, called Tom Johnson, and he was part of a secret plot to rescue Napoleon by submarine, which makes him the first person to invent a submarine. That's fact one. Fact two, John F. Kennedy Sr., that's JFK's daddy, was a known smuggler with ties to Al Capone, which was confirmed by WikiLeaks during that era, right? And fact three, I'm bringing it home. Have you heard of Dahiro manga. Well, fact three is that the owner or founder of Max Air in Nigeria is an alleged smuggler who single-handedly destroyed the Nigerian textile industry.
Which one is the lie? That's not supposed to.
Which one is the lie?
The first one is the obvious lie.
Oh my God, you got it wrong. I'm so...
Really? How?
Wow, I'm so happy. I was like, ooh, how do I play this game when you get it wrong?
The other two I'm pretty sure, like, are correct.
No, the thing is that, like, there's actually no proof that Daddy JFK was a smuggler with ties to Al Capone. So...
When you say there's no proof, because I've read, like, so the thing is...
Okay, we can discuss it.
Yeah,
if,
yeah.
It's an iffy one, like...
No, so the thing is, there was a point in my life I was obsessed with the Kennedys.
Okay.
So I'm very familiar with
this story.
Yes. So like in terms of, because I know that like during Prohibition, he was like a bootlegger.
Okay. We'll go into that.
Okay. Yes.
So should we go into that first?
Yeah. We can go into that.
Which one do you want to go first?
Let's go to the first one first, because that's the only one I wasn't familiar with.
Okay. This one is a funny story, I think. So it's talking about this secret plot to rescue Napoleon by submarine.
Just out of, like, I wasn't expecting a British man called Tom Johnson to be hanging out with Napoleon.
Yeah, so this guy lives a very interesting life. So let me give you some background into Tom Johnson, the smuggler. I don't know why I just said that like that. But basically, he is known as Lymington's most famous smuggler. He was born in 1772, and he was brought up as a fisherman by his dad, who was a smuggler. So I don't think he was brought up as a fisherman. I think
he was brought up as a smuggler.
Family business. It says that by the age of 12, he had developed formidable skills of seamanship, and he knew the south coast
England. What's the problem of seaman?
Like, I don't expect this from you. I don't expect this from you, my wife.
Sorry, I couldn't resist. Don't say it. What's the problem of seaman?
Anyways, he knew the south coast of England so well.
Man.
That by 15, he was... He was piloting his own sea vessels, and he was a smuggler himself. I'm really happy for you in the era. Okay, so we were talking about, where were we? Seamen. Before NEPA took light. Anyways, this guy, by the age of 15, is a serious smuggler. And a lot of sources say that, like, they don't know if this is true or if it's tinged with romanticism, because he becomes this famous, smuggling pirate, submarine creator, whatever. But one source said that he's said to be over six feet tall, with handsome, clear-cut features, dark curly hair, and vivid blue eyes. Women, children, dogs, and horses adored him.
Women, children, dogs, and horses. Interesting.
They're basically saying that he looked good, he smelled good, and he became really, really rich. And he would work for both the French and the English governments when they were at each other's throats. He did double agent, he helped the French. And that's how he, like, gets, you know, into this whole Napoleon thing. It's also said that he also spends time in jail. First, he was taken prisoner by the French, and he languished in French jail. And then he was thrown into Fleet Prison, like debtor's prison in England. He broke out of every prison. It said that no prison could hold him for long. And then, what do you want to say now?
No, just when you say he broke out from every prison, I was like, that sounds like a prayer.
Break every chain.
Yeah, bro.
Bro, that's the type of prayer I need right now.
Bro, you will break out of every prison.
Amen.
You will break out of it.
And the current prison I'm in right now is the prison of refusing to go to the gym. Somebody is out here.
Which is crazy, because I feel like I was looking at a previous conversation and we had this. I told you that you should climb this scale. That's what you know.
The worst part is that, like, I've been climbing the scale, like, literally.
And it's not triggering you.
It's not. Like, I didn't know my mental health was all the way here. I thought I was weaker. I was like, what is it going to take? But I also think it's also a little bit of a, like, an economy thing, because my gym now is like 50 something K. But like when I joined as a copper and I was paying something with like 15K or 20K. Like then now I increased it, but I used Wayo to stay on 20K for like 2 years. But because I quit the gym for that long, if I go back now, I'm paying 55K a month. And like, can I afford that?
Well, you spend that on your fashions now, your Instagram vendors.
Wow, not you coming with sense. Yes, I am going back to the gym. So my friend messaged me and he was like, oh, because I've been eating good though. Okay. I've been trying. So like last 2 weeks, you know, low carbs, high protein. I'm trying to get back on it. And veg for every meal. And my friend messaged me and he was like, oh, so like, you know, gym. And I snapped at him.
When you say friend, what type of friend?
No, like my actual friend. Oh, like okay. My actual friend. And he was like, oh, so like, you know, we're matched though. Cause he was like, are you going back to the gym? I was like, step by step, at least I'm eating healthy. And he was like, we're matched though. And I said, you know, there was no light. Like the things I said to you, I was so upset.
I mean, it's like 3 months from summer. So
I know. I am going to get back in the gym. Inshallah. Okay. Anyways, let's go back to Johnston. Somebody who obviously did not need a gym because he was a sexy 6 foot tall smuggling kingpin who was breaking out prisons. There was a report in 1802 because, mind you, like, he lived a very weird life because he was like a criminal, right? But he made so much money and apparently was so charismatic that he would hang out with the higher classes of society. I know back in the day how classes do, like,
yeah.
Not the way we say classes now, right? He would not enter Miku unless you went to school abroad. Like, no, but.
I was supposed to go to Miku tonight.
Oh, but you know, we're recording on a Friday night. I want people to know that we are recording on a Friday night. Why do we not? We need. I mean, you're fine. I'm unmarried. I'm actually single. Like, I should be out. I should have. I should go out with my girlies. Do you want to know? I'm a bit triggered because yesterday I went to Miku to drop a friend.
I'm scared of what you're going to say.
Yesterday I went to Miku. You're not going to expect this. Yesterday I went to Miku to drop my friend.
Uh-huh.
And I drop her. She's like, just come in now, just say hi, like say hi to Ozzy and I was like, okay. I go in, I say hi to everyone. I'm like, okay, let me get out of here because it's hot. Like, I'm not wearing makeup. I'm just here to drop her. I have work tomorrow, whatever. Go outside, my car won't start.
That happened to me at book club yesterday.
I was so embarrassed because, like, my car wouldn't start. It wouldn't open. I didn't know what to do.
Mine was the
key. It was just your car key.
It was
battery.
Yeah. So we had like for like 10 minutes in the because we went to book club for breakfast.
Oh god.
Like, because I think we had an errand to run in the morning, so it was just like, hey, you know what? Let's just like do breakfast. Like, we're already on our road, and so we went, and then obviously it's like, okay, let's go home, and then.
The car, so I first of all, they're like, oh, it's probably just your car key. Nah, it was the car battery,
yeah.
So first I like, and at this point, like, I'm outside, I'm sweating, I'm in panic because I'm like, I need to go home, I don't know what I'm going to do. Yeah. I can't leave my car out here also because like things be happening on the streets.
Yeah, but make it safe.
Yeah, but I heard a story of like a month ago that the parking lot next to Miku, where they make you park if you're not a member, like some people's cars were getting broken into or something like that. So I was just like, I need to get my car out of here and I don't want to ride an Uber at this time. And I was like, okay, let me go back. Yeah, it was at night. So I was like, okay, let me go back inside, see who I can ask for help. But I'm like panicking. I'm like sweating.
Miku don't have like a jump start and all that shit.
No, but thankfully my cousin was there. Shout out to Bobo, who you've interviewed actually. You interviewed Bobo for.
Yeah, shout out to Bobo, Felt Republic.
Yeah. So shout out to Bobo and his driver who sorted me out and I was able to get home. But I was so embarrassed. And my mom was like, why are you embarrassed? It happens to people. I was like, bro, like people.
Nothing embarrassed about that.
I wasn't embarrassed that my car stopped working. I was embarrassed by how much I was sweating because I was panicking.
Yeah,
Yeah. And then it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, I couldn't cool down. Like, I was not calm. It was just, I was like, what is this? What is this? Global warming? Okay. Okay. So let's talk about Johnston's, one of his prison breaks as written in the newspapers. By the way, like, there's so many stories about this guy that they don't even really know his last name. It's like spelled differently in newspapers and people's books, whatever. But okay, Johnston, the notorious smuggler this morning, effected his escape. Notwithstanding, he was confined in a strong room with a double door. At the top of each door was a panel instead of glass. By forcing these out and creeping through them, Johnston was able to reach the gallery. From thence, the high wall that surrounds the prison. There he found a rope ladder, which his friend outside had provided for him. In the evening, he arrived in a case and four on the coast near Brighton, where a lugger was in waiting for him, in which he embarked on for Calais, on his way to Flushing. He had a severe wound in the thigh, which he received in the following manner. He had gotten on the top of the last wall that separated from him and the street, 70 feet from the ground. A lamp was set in the wall some distance beneath the place where he was. He let himself down so as to fall astride the bracket, and in so doing, a piece of iron caught his thigh above the knee. He ripped his thigh almost to the top. So, anyways, he recovered from his wounds in France. So now let's talk about how this smuggler, who I feel like is maybe the least interesting part of this episode. Let's talk about the secret Napoleon part. Okay, everybody knows. I don't know if everybody knows. But Napoleon was Bonaparte. There were so many words for him. What are those nicknames of Napoleon?
How tall is Napoleon?
Apparently, like, his height is over exaggerated.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah. TMT and I have spoken about this before. Because somebody, like, saved his penis.
What do you mean? Like, that's why they cut it off and they saved it.
Yes. And, like, it's in some woman's house in America.
Was he packaged? Was it like a thing where he...
I need to remember, because, you know, honestly, I forget sometimes. You know, sometimes people come out, like, talk to me about Dutch Lab podcast episodes, which makes sense because I did do the episode, I researched it. But you guys, like, I forget things sometimes. But I think Napoleon's penis is, like, somewhere in, like, Boston or something, in some woman's apartment. Oh, I don't have service in your house, so I can't check. So, Napoleon was in exile on the island of St. Helena in, like, the middle of the Atlantic because the British sent him to exile. They didn't want to risk him coming back. He was there for 6 years before he died. But before he died, it is alleged that Tom Johnston, this famous smuggler, adventurer, and inventor of submarines, sketched in 1834 this plan to free Napoleon from St. Helena. Oh, by the way, like, I keep saying Tom Johnston is British, which he is, but I feel like it's important to clarify that this is an Irishman.
I think I was going to say he was
Welsh. You thought I was going to say he was what?
He was Welsh.
He was Welsh?
I thought you were going to say he was, like, from Wales.
From Wales. Oh, no. I want to just clarify that he's Irish, because you know how the Irish are. They're different. But basically, it says that in 1820 or so, he was offered a sum of £40,000 to rescue the Emperor Napoleon from exile. And he drew up this submarine. Look at it.
Doesn't look bad.
Honestly. Like, yeah. You know, at this time, obviously, there were no, like, underwater vessels. So this is one of the first plans.
So he literally, like, invented the submarine.
Yeah, but the thing is that he wasn't the only person. So he met this other guy whose name was, let's see. Okay, this guy called Fulton, who was an American, I believe.
Okay.
And Fulton had plans for, so Fulton is an inventor, and he is remembered for developing the first practical steamboat.
Okay.
And he had spent years in France peddling designs for a submarine. And he had actually persuaded Napoleon to help him build an experimental craft called the Natulius in 1800, so this 20 years prior.
Okay.
And it was tested with apparent success on the CN. And a few years later, he designed a second, more advanced vessel. And the illustration of that vessel that he designed is similar to the illustrations of Johnson's submarines. His own is not a submarine, but like the illustrations are very simple.
Similar.
And apparently after he designed this second, vessel, the French were not interested. So he was like, I'm defecting to Britain because I must make my money. And in 1804, he signed a contract with the British Prime Minister, William Pitt, to develop his own system of submarines for warfare, and that he would get £100,000 in the event of their success. Now, it's hard to determine where Fulton and Tom Johnson met. Like, nothing, no historical fact, like, kind of survives to, like, let us know.
They were probably pen pals.
But there are quite a few books, including diaries by, like, French generals, books by Tom Fulton's, like, prison mates, you know, and books by, like, authors around that time that all speak to this event. So, like, it definitely happened, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
It's pretty much backed by sources from that era. Like, it's not like people are just talking about it 10, 15 years down the line.
Yeah.
It's like there's a French general who talks about plans. He doesn't name Tom Johnson, but everything kind of aligns. Like, the thing is, because this guy is a smuggler and criminal, you kind of have to, like, take his word at... With a pinch of salt. Like, oh, okay. Because after he also talks about, I was not just supposed to rescue the emperor, but like an Egyptian prince or whatever also reached out. You know, like, it goes crazy. But yeah, I would say this is the story. I'm not getting that into it. Like, I'm not going to describe the submarine in detail. But yeah, there was a criminal and there was 100% a plot to rescue Napoleon via submarine. But then he died from cancer.
So he never got to rescue Napoleon.
Yeah. So, yeah. And also the sources come from both the French side and the British. Yeah. So it's like, yeah.
Interesting.
So now
we've gotten the least interesting one out of the way.
Oh, actually, like, I don't know. Now thinking back, like, I feel like this is more interesting than the Kennedys. But okay, let's jump to Nigeria and then let's end back in my other country. Was it Tazuni?
Okay, continue.
Dahiru Mangal. What do you know about this man?
I know he was part of the mythical Kapal.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
Yeah, do his time.
I know he's from Katsina.
Yes.
I know that he was a prominent PDP sponsor.
PDP sponsor or Yar'Adua sponsor?
Well, it seems like he was both.
Mm.
And he supposedly is responsible for the decline of like textile industry in Nigeria, northern Nigeria.
They call him the man who makes you import
Ankara
from China.
Bro, that's crazy. We've made in Nigeria type of them.
Bro, that is absolutely insane. The fact that they fake made in Nigeria tag, it just like that's deep now.
Yeah, like, you know what you should do now? What? You know, like, when Trump says China. You should just edit that and put that in
there. Oh my gosh, Trump. I'm apparently supposed to talk about him on the news tomorrow. I am not going to.
Why? What's he done?
I don't know, man. Just like Trump-Biden update. Like, I don't care. Trump wants to win. He's probably going to. And good luck to the Democrats for creating this situation. Dahiru Mangal, founder of Max Line, started from humble beginnings, apparently, as a truck driver.
That makes sense.
After his former education. According to Naira Metrics, in this what seems like a PR piece, he leveraged strategic friendships and associations to secure business contracts and grew his empire in different sectors. Mangal is the chairman and CEO of Max Air Limited and has engaged, apparently, in philanthropic acts and infrastructural development programs, including a cement plant and a power plant construction. Now, for the rest of this episode, I'm going to preface everything with allegedly. I'm saying allegedly now, so I don't have to keep saying allegedly later.
Don't worry, if you don't say it, I'll help you say it.
Thank you for having my back. Because if the IGP comes to carry me, I will drop your address. I will absolutely snitch. I am not. I will want company in the prison cell, okay?
Well, they will put us in the same place.
That's true. They'll put me in a woman's cell, they put you in a man's cell. So that means, like, no matter what I do, I'm alone. I might as well.
You'll make new friends.
Am I friendly?
You'll make new friends. You don't have a choice in that type of situation.
Am I friendly?
For survival.
Chioma Okoli, in my report with her, explained what prison was like in the, you know, the time she spent in prison for her Facebook post. No. No.
That gym you don't want to go to. You go gym by force.
No. I would, no. No, that is not for me. You know how people talk about, oh, like Gamma, what's her name again? Sawaba, that woman, Hajia Sawaba, who's like,
who's that?
She was fighting, she fought for women's rights to vote in the North.
Okay.
And she was stabbed, she was thrown in prison. She's like often quoted as the most arrested, like political prisoner in Nigeria, whatever. But my own is like, how do you go to prison like multiple times, especially when you kind of had like a soft life? Like, y'all forgive me because obviously I like softness, but even if I didn't, Nigerian prison, like there was a hole in the ceiling, which, okay, that's not surprising, but that means it was raining on her and she was standing in like filth and water, and like, who does that?
I don't feel like Nigerian prison would be different from like
American prison.
No, from like NYC camp, for instance.
I mean, did you see that they spend, the Comptroller General of Correction went in front of either House of Representatives and spoke about how, like, we budget more for the dogs in the correctional services than for prisoners for food.
That's crazy, but I'm not surprised again.
So, I'm sure it's worse than NYC.
No, but, well...
It's worse.
How big are the prison rooms? Like,
they're not big. Like, because, like, you know, you have holding cells, but then you also have like all these spaces where they just put through like tons and tons of people in the same room.
That's what I was trying to clock. Because I went to NYC camp.
But NYC camp has beds.
No, but those beds, like, bro, I'm as well.
But they don't have beds. I've
been sleeping on the wood. Okay, like, the mattress was barely there.
There's no bed in Kirikiri. Unless you're a VIP prisoner, there's no bed. Have you seen pictures of our prison?
I've been to
Kirikiri. Okay. Well, I haven't been to Kirikiri. I've been to Kirikiri prison. There's no bed.
I've been to Kirikiri a couple of times, but to be honest, I didn't see like where they slept.
Okay. So, there's no bed.
Fair enough. So what, they sleep on the floor? Like mat?
Yeah, I'm sure like you can get someone to buy mats for you if you have like family or something or favor or whatever, but otherwise they're on the floor.
Is that fun? I know there's this thing, no AC, but is that fun?
Like, how would there be fun?
Small ceiling fan. Is it just...
How would there be fun?
Yeah.
Is there even fun in? Is there fun in NYC?
No, there wasn't.
Oh, they will now be fun in our prisons. Okay, let's talk about the alleged smuggler. Dahir Barrow Mangal was born on the 3rd of August, 1957 in Katsina State to the family of Alhaji Barrow Mangal and his mother Hajia Murjanatu Mangal.
Allegedly.
He grew up with his family in Katsina and had his early education in Katsina.
Allegedly.
He then went to primary school, Katsina Arabic Teachers College, and graduated in 1976, after which he became a hustler, starting out as a truck driver.
Allegedly.
And apparently fortune smiled on him and he was able to branch off into several businesses.
When they say fortune smiled on him, so was he just driving the truck? He just saw like...
No, let me tell you something. Sometimes I see Nigerian journalism and I know... We're technically part of Nigerian journalism.
Yeah, but we're not from the brown paper tribe.
Yeah. It's just like, what are you talking for? Like, if you say fortune smiled on him like 5 times and this person goes from truck driver to owning MRS Oil Nigeria PLC, please do something in the middle. Like, come on. Anyways, Sahara Reporters has an article called How Buhari Rewarded Dahiru Mangal.
I saw the article.
Smuggling kingpin whose activities killed Nigerian textile industry with national honor, which is true.
Yeah, because why are you giving
Mangal is now CON. He is a commander of the Order of the Niger.
Oh, CCC. That actually is apt. Say CON, spell it. Like, just say it.
Con.
Exactly. It makes sense. So even in Buhari's like state of like madness, he was still in on the joke.
have you seen Buhari laugh before?
Yeah, I have. But then it's funny because there's like a video that's playing in my head where like he laughs, but then he stops. You know, it's like that Kanye West, like the meme where it's like he's laughing and then he realizes like that everyone is watching him laugh and then he stops and then frowns. Like
that's boo boo. Okay, so the Sahara, you've seen the
Sahara Reporters article, yeah.
Yeah. So there is a Financial Times journalist called Burgess who published a book in 2015 about smuggling in Africa. It's called The Looting Machine: Warlords, Tycoons, Smugglers, and the Systematic Theft of Africa's Wealth. It's by mm-hmm. Tom Burgess. It was published in 2015. And you can find it on Amazon, Kindle, if you have Amazon US, non-Kindle. If you have Amazon UK, for some reason, it's not on Kindle in the UK store. Anyways, he talks about, there's an article, Financial Times article that goes into.
Yeah, I think there's like an extract on it.
Yeah, there's an extract on it. And it talks about Mangal and his activities. And it's called Nigeria Unraveled. Now, the very funny thing about this, which I guess it's not that funny, is that I found out about this when I was researching El Rufai.
Yeah, because there's a link to El Rufai.
Yeah, in 2005. Now, Mangal is, can you be doing your allegedly?
Oh, allegedly.
Okay, so Mangal, the route that he takes is Niger into Nigeria, border of Katsina.
Allegedly.
And in 2005, apparently he was so powerful that they were like, bro, like, we can't actually stop him. So let's beg him.
Allegedly.
So it's alleged that in 2005, Olusegun Obasanjo decided to do something about smuggling and the damage it was causing the textile industry. So he dispatched Nasir El-Rufai.
Allegedly.
Yes. Who was a minister from Kaduna. At that point, later governor of Kaduna, to try and get Mangal to clean up his act.
Allegedly.
El Rufai told Burgess, who wrote this book, that Mangal asked him, why does Obasanjo call me a smuggler? I just do logistics. I don't buy any of the goods that are smuggled. I'm just providing a service.
Allegedly.
And it talks about his smuggling hegemony, and it doesn't just include textiles. It's alleged that the smuggling capabilities of Mangal, just the amount of fake made in Nigeria,
yeah,
fake made in Nigeria clothes he was about and bringing in, you
from
know,
from China.
You know, they would bring it in. Okay, so there's some WikiLeaks on this. So let me go to the WikiLeaks on this, because it said that. So you have obviously information that was classified but leaked with WikiLeaks.
Sorry, I just looked on my phone.
Yes.
And there's an alert from the New York Times.
Okay.
Breaking news. A New Jersey businessman pleaded guilty to trying to bribe Senator Robert Menendez by giving his wife a Mercedes Benz. And I was just like, this just sounds so Nigerian. But yeah, back to you.
President Tinubu, I just got an alert. President Tinubu congratulates top fashion designer Folake Akindele on 50th birthday. This is tweeted by NGR President.
But there's obviously a reason why now.
What was the reason?
Her former husband is is an APC boy.
Who?
Folake Koka.
No comment. Because.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they're not together again. I do know. But I know because I saw like her name came up in documents. No, obviously. Crazy. What is she? What is she? Oh, okay. Yeah. Investment promotion. Okay. Yeah, it was always, like, he ain't good now. Like, anyway.
Anyway, so yeah, so this is one of the unclassified documents. Calls, this is like the U.S., you know, ambassador and like U.S. consulate doing all these interviews and getting all this information. And they called Dahiru Mangal Yar'Adua's Mr. Fix-It. It says, it's alleged that...
Every president has one of those.
Yeah, it says alleged that Mangal would take care of anything filthy that Yar'Adua needs done, in addition to smuggling items for several wealthy Nigerian businessmen through Niger into Kano. A Kano business contact corroborated the allegations that a contact, who I will not name, obviously, even though they leaked his name, corroborated the information that was being gathered, observed that Mangal no longer deals openly in illicit activities since Yar'Adua named him as a special advisor earlier this month. So Obasanjo couldn't stop him, but Yar'Adua allegedly could. It said that what's this guy's name?
Mangal
had a warehouse in Niger.
Allegedly.
Where you have hundreds of containers stored, and he would take a flat fee of $2 million and not charge you custom duties on your actual.
He constituted himself customs.
You know when you said he constituted himself? Do you know what that reminds me of?
What? Constituted authority?
No, it reminds me of my interview with Bello Adoke, where he said, Emefiele constituted himself the Attorney General of the Federation. He constituted himself the this and this. He even constituted himself the Foreign Minister from that his wretched office.
Yeah. I mean, so see, the word wretched is one of my favorite words in the English language. And one of the reasons why it particularly like stands out is like when people use it, listen to like the way like their inflections, the way they'll like say it's like it's such a beautiful word.
It's
like,
delicious. It's actually a good it's a good one. In another WikiLeaks they refer to Mangal as one of the president's besties. They call him, he said to have benefited from contract with when Yar'Adua was governor of Katsina. He's alleged to be one of the wealthiest businessmen in the north and in Katsina itself. Here they say it's rumored, please, allegedly rumored to have connections with some fundamentalists in the north, but I don't know anything about that. That's not what we're talking about today. Now, I'm sorry, but I need to read this part out. It has nothing to do with Mangal. But it has to do with an often forgotten attorney general, Michael Anduka.
Oh yeah.
So this is really, really funny because this is in a US wire and this is going from like, oh God, let me just read the sentence.
That was a terrible, look, I'm trying to think, like that was a terrible attorney general.
Allegedly.
No, that one, I'm saying it in my chest. I don't even need to fucking, I don't even know allegedly. Terrible word.
He's the attorney general that precedes Bello Adoke, who I interviewed.
Yeah. Because he's the one who was, when Jonathan was obviously, I guess, trying to, when all the stuff was happening in Yar'Adua.
Yeah.
Like, he was one of the people that was all like, he was just like, you know, like the useful idiot thing. Like, he exemplified it. It's like,
I'm going to read this line because it talks about how like Anduka is one of these people who was an advocate from removing EFCC chairman Ribadu, now our NSA Ribadu. You know, this is when Ribadu was going through trials and tribulations. And it said, but this is the funniest part. So it basically talks about Anduka and he's talking about EFCC, etc. Last line says, if you think of Darth Vader, you think of the AG.
I'm dead.
Darth Vader. Oh my God. Like, I was like, yeah, no, this is random. So I feel like I've gotten a bit distracted. But yeah, this is the whole cabal / mafia you're talking about. If anyone who's listening to this podcast has not read Bello Adoke's book, Burden of Service, please buy it, read it.
You know, it's funny, on the Yar'Adua time, the two books that were kind of like really What was it too? I mean, Shagor Denizen was really cool.
I haven't read that one. Send it to me. But Burden of Service by Bella Duque. I can give you a copy.
Why? Because you got like 20.
I do have like 20, yes.
Did he sign everyone?
No, I don't. I don't know. I have. I do open them. Like, I give them to the listeners of the pod.
Please.
I'll be happy to. It's so funny. But the second thing is that I read El Rufai's book, which is The Accidental Public Servant.
Yeah.
And El Rufai is as biting in his book as he is in his interviews. And there's
he's a short man.
This is why Ife fights you people. No, I shouldn't even say that. I mean, but objectively, he's short. But what is wrong with me? What is wrong with you? But the reason why I say that this is really funny is because, like, there's a part where he talks about, like, he talks about Yaradua years, like, extensively, yeah. And his beef with Yaradua. You know, they went to the same primary, same secondary school.
Yeah.
So they've known each other since they were younger. And he basically says that Yaradua was dirty, and we confuse that with humble. That, like, he didn't take care of himself. Like, he's supposed to be this rich prince, and he was always looking rough and scruffy, and we confuse that with humble. We just didn't consider the fact that he had bad hygiene. I'm paraphrasing.
I'm dead.
But I read that part, and I was screaming in my house.
You know, it's
so petty. I know, that is so petty. And, you know, because Yaradua is dead or died, people kind of, like, you can't say anything negative about him in the Nigerian public space. There's no space for it.
Ill of the dead.
You can't speak ill of the dead, except it's Abacha and you're a southerner. But. But.
Look at you being inclusive.
But that part of the book was so funny. I also thoroughly enjoyed Accidental Public Servant by El Rufai. So you guys should read that book. But yeah, so I found this story out because allegedly sent El Rufai to go and beg this man to stop smuggling goods into Nigeria, and he was like,
I provide logistics.
I'm just the logistics guy. Like, would you call DHL a cocaine trafficker? There might be cocaine in their packages, but it's not my business. So it talks about how Kaduna basically lost their textile industry.
Mm-hmm.
And not just it's not just the industry. Over 300,000 jobs were lost. That means the economy of the cities were lost. That means the supporting businesses, like the supporting jobs, not just in the textile industry, but people who are making money for their families, sending their children to school, people who are selling food, you know, people in the market, the labor force, the guys who were doing logistics, drivers who were taking these materials throughout the country. So they lost their jobs and it affected the city. And when we look at insecurity today in Kaduna and we look at insecurity in the north, we also have to consider the fact that industries have been killed. Industries have died.
You know, it's crazy that we're saying this because, like, a similar thing happened in England, like in the north, like post-Thatcher, where it was like, a lot of, like, the industries just kind of essentially just fell apart,
you know. And you have people, and, you know, in this article and the book, it says that Chinese contraband had so thoroughly captured the market that it was impossible for Nigerian operations to compete. Because obviously China has, like, cheap labor and they're mass producing. And essentially, it says that, like, Nigeria became a consignment to the trash can of globalization.
I think the thing I even find crazy about that thing is, like, the fact that it became cheaper to get it from China than to do it here. Like,
yeah, but that kind of makes sense. Like, you know, then the Chinese construction companies in Nigeria that use slave labor.
Yeah.
Like, what, you can't compete against slave labor. And, like, economies of scale to that scale, like,
I guess also when you're smuggling it, because the thing I was thinking about is, like, okay, not just, like, obviously the cost of production, but also, like, the cost of transportation. I mean, obviously, yeah, you're smuggling it into the country, but, like, you're still going to get it to Niger from China.
Yeah.
Like, so that's still, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's crazy.
It is. And so it said that during the 1990s, Chinese factories started copying African designs, opening their own distribution branches. And there were 16 factories in China that were dedicated to churning out textiles with a Made in Nigeria badge sewn into them.
Crazy. buy Nigeria to grow the naira.
For a time, the Chinese material was of a much lower quality than the Nigerian original. You know, if you say China to say bad, like China. But they said the gap narrowed as Chinese standards rose, and obviously their prices were much lower, which meant they took over the market.
You know, on that point, when you reminded me of something. So one time I was trying to buy an AC. And the guy there was like, I didn't want this one because I was like, oh, it's from China. He said, which one would come from China?
Not you being racist. well, that's fair. Which one would come from China? But yeah, so it said that Manga, please, allegedly. Yes, thank you. Acts as the facilitator, the conduit between manufacturer and distributor, managing a shadow in economy that includes the border authorities and political elites.
Allegedly.
It said that he charges a flat fee of, $2 million, that would have been exorbitant, 2 million naira in 2013, which is 13,000 per cargo.
But in this economy, those numbers would be crazy.
Yeah, man. $13,000 today is like, what? That's like 15M.
Yeah.
That's like times 7x in 10 years. Oh, we're suffering.
That's why he collected corn. Buhari well
done. Oh, my gosh. In 2008, Manga was estimated to be bringing about 140 feet shipping containers across the frontier each month.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
Would you fly Max Air?
I've flown Max Air before.
Oh, you have?
Yeah. I think I flew it to Kwara for a wedding.
Knowing what you know now, would you still fly it?
If the ticket is 100K and ValueJet is 150, because Max Air is supposed to be safe.
Interesting.
My answer is no for listeners, because I do stand on business. Unfortunately for me, standing on business is expensive.
It is.
It's uncomfortable. It's not fun.
It's a harder thing than like doing not standing on business.
It's not actually fun. Like, I feel like people don't understand how unfun it is to stand on business. I'm just required to do it by virtue of my personality because I have pride and I'm stubborn. So I must stand on business. But like, yeah. There was a time where I was in Polo. I feel like I spoke about this. I don't know when. I feel like I've spoken about this recently, but I was in Polo Club and like I was like walking past the box and a guy called me in. I feel like he might be listening. Somebody who knows saw the situation. Anyways, he called me in and he goes, you know, you're very anti-ABC. I was like, no, I'm not. Like, and then he was like, oh, this person is, I don't know, they're like two or three APC, the lawmakers, appointees or whatever in the room. And my friend was there. So, but it was basically like a bunch of niggas, right? And me. And I was like, I'm not anti-APC, I'm anti-rubbish. If somebody doing rubbish, I'll call you out. If somebody else is doing rubbish, I'll call them out. Right now, you're in power and you guys are doing a lot of rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and he was just like, oh, but are you gonna, you know, like, I like you guys now. I hang out with you guys. I'm glad you can see that, but let's be real. Like, I'm going to say what I say. I was like, do you think I'm going to say it when I rise? I'm not saying it to your face.
I mean, if you said it to the rise, like,
I was like, do you think I'll post something on my Instagram and not be able to talk about it? I'm not that girl. Like, I'm really not even. And the thing about it is, I honestly think I'm my best version when I'm challenged. Like, if somebody like challenges me or tries to come at me, that's actually when my brain wakes up. Cause sometimes my brain be sleeping. but it's like my brain knows that we're in a situation. And that's why I start remembering things I didn't know I remembered. Sometimes I'm in an argument and I use language that I did not know was in my lexicon, my personal pocket of the words I use. I was like, I say that? if you're seeing the guy or something, like, or if I'm dating a guy or not dating a guy, whatever, and we're having an argument, sometimes like the things I say, I'm like, wow, you go school.
You're quick on your feet.
I'm quick. Yeah, no, I am. But yeah, no, I stand on business and it sucks. Like, I wish, like, I just feel like, you know, sometimes like I don't want to talk about Nigeria's problems at Polo Club. Like, I know we're going to, but like, I actually don't want to right now because I'm going to wake up and talk about it tomorrow. And I wake up and talk about it the day after. And at least that one pays me. They're paying me.
Yeah.
Well, I'm literally coming here to chill. And like, I'm obviously going to argue with you. What do you want me to say? half of you have collected an appointment, half of you are waiting for the appointment. What do you want me to say? Am I supposed to shut up?
No, you should tell them how you feel.
And honestly, and then on TikTok, somebody else was, you know, after my fashion interview on TikTok, people were abusing me that I have agbado in my pocket. And then then other people were saying, oh, she's an obedient. Other people were saying, oh, I'm like, everybody, it's the same clip.
Everyone will project what they want
to project. You're projecting what you want to project. And I have peace in knowing that the same clip on different social media or YouTube or TikTok, whatever, it elicits such a different response. That I'm just like, oh, I'm cool.
That's crazy because people see what they want to see. It's so funny, particularly when it's like, it's just so off base.
But yeah, so manga, like, should we talk? I'm not going to talk about any connections to anything bad except for smuggling. It says that the share scale of Mangal's smuggling operation gave him sway over Nigeria's northern borderlands, where many of the North's senior politicians were. It's said that so many people were benefiting from the customs service the way it was that they wanted to keep it like that. It was allegedly said by Yakubu Dogara, who was a member.
Speaker.
Yeah. Speaker of the Speaker of the House of Reps in the Nigerian National Assembly. He chaired an inquiry into the customs service, and according to the writer of this book, when he asked Dogara about Mangal's role, he suggested that he was at the center of a smuggling operation. And he goes, some of the perpetrators are well known. Even customs knows them, but they are not empowered to go after them. He apparently paused and said, the person you have just mentioned is untouchable. Untouchable. That is Mangal. The number given in the Financial Times is that 325,000 people out of 350,000 who were employed in the Nigerian textile industry lost their jobs. That is an insane number. And I mean, also an industry that just no longer exists.
And that's why we import Ankara. That's why we import Ankara.
That's why we import Ankara. And it's also just sad because you also think about people who had lives and livelihoods that had, they were doing valuable work or tangible work. And like, you look at Kaduna today and like, Kaduna like has dealt with so much insecurity and just all these things. And it's, you just think about how sometimes you can actually draw a straight line.
And it's funny because obviously it kind of links back to where we started. But again, that's just like representative of the decline of Nigeria. Like, you can literally just trace it.
Yeah.
So from like, you go from like obviously state capture to like, and all these things are kind of obviously symptomatic of all those things, because it's like now you have a situation where one person essentially has wiped out a whole industry. And
he is a con. A commander of the Niger. And I think also, like, when, you know, we look into this and you see that, okay, he funded Yar'Adua as governor, as president of PDP, bag, as you said. He also has a close relationship with Buhari, who then awards him.
Con.
He apparently goes clean because they're like, you're too big to fail, as if he's JP Morgan. So he just goes clean. Too big to take down, right? The government is like, we have to beg you. And like, Yar'Adua is like, okay, guy, you're my friend now. Enough of this bad behavior.
You know what I'm just thinking? Just imagine being Mangal when, like, in 2007, 2006, when it became clear that Yar'Adua was going to be president. Like, bro, that guy could not, like, that's why he would not have been able, that those are his wildest dreams coming true. Like, you were there just, you know, just in your little corner in Katsina doing your thing. And all of a sudden, this guy that you've been funding has just, they're just like, yeah, this guy's going to become president. It's like, ooh.
As in, and there's one of these wires that call him Yar'Adua's best dude, but I don't know. But it also, there are quite a few wires going through the US embassy and like US intelligence talking about his closeness with Yar'Adua, especially around the time Yar'Adua was ill and they were trying to figure it out. And it said that, like, random, but it said that, like, a lot of these guys talk about how Yar'Adua is allegedly, like, clean, but that Yar'Adua has wife? Dirty!
But, you know, like, that whole cabal time, they were saying that, because they were essentially saying she was the one.
No, but this is preceding. This is actually preceding the cabal. Intelligence reports I was reading was preceding the cabal. We're talking about her time when he was Katsina governor, which is crazy.
The other thing I kind of also remember about her was like when Yar'Adua was president, and she engineered like three of her daughters to get married to governors. So like,
I just love a forward-thinking woman. Do you know what? Like, I have no beef with her on that. Like, cause you know something, in law, unless you're Buhari, in law stuff can get you far, man. Especially in the north, like marrying into those families, it's beneficial. Family ties are key, bro. Keeps the legacy, keeps the prestige. I was reading this intelligence report about like the cabal, Yar'Adua's cabal. It's so funny knowing what's to come afterwards. Because do you like, imagine all these guys who are eating good during this era and like bullying Ribadu. Now, like power is so transient that I don't understand why people do certain things. Is it hubris?
Yeah, it is hubris. I think it's like when you're in power, you don't think.
You don't think it'll end?
Yeah, I think people like, yeah, they don't think it'll end. And obviously, it's also like, yeah, you don't think it'll end and you lean into it fully. So, yeah.
Who would you say are the members of the Tinubu cabal, if you had to?
The Tinubu cabal?
Yeah. Like the, let's, what do you call them? The Lagos City Boys crew.
So the thing with that is, so now, when we say the Tinubu cabal, because I don't think it's not like they're not controlling him. It's different in a way. Like what they are is like they are brain trust. So essentially it's like leadership by committee. And a lot of them, I think, is kind of clear now. Like Cardi B, Gbaja. Then there's also Tony Subaya. It was what about Tony Subaya?
What?
Tony Subaya got the rise of Love Island, Nigeria. But he's not used it. He's been following daddy up and down.
Oh my God. Is that why they keep saying it's coming, it's coming, it's coming?
It's not coming.
Oh my God.
It's not coming because he's not, he's like, he's not.
His technical title is SA, what, domestic affairs.
Yeah, I think so. Home or domestic affairs.
I heard he's pulling muscle there, man.
He got pull muscle now. If you were him, you know, pull muscle. Head of domestic affairs. You know how powerful that position is.
Very.
You know, oh God. The other thing reminds me of is like when, I mean, this was like maybe 2 years ago, when Andy Uba was debating Soludo. And essentially, I think there was a point where Andy was boasting that, like, you know, he brought Soludo to Obasanjo. And Soludo fires back that, like, you didn't bring me shit. Like, you were there laying bed and, like... Because I think
like it was the same like title,
yeah.
Oh, but I mean, that was powerful.
Well, yeah, he was very powerful when Obasanjo was president. But yeah, so if we're saying what the Tinubu cabal,
yeah,
I'll say those guys. I mean, Ribadu, obviously. What's this close to Tinubu?
ST.
Oh yeah, I mean that one goes without saying.
First son.
And also the thing is like first son obviously now empowered all his own people.
Yeah. Honestly, like, you know, shout out to any of y'all if y'all listen to this. I know y'all are my friends or my enemies, setting, depending on what I say on my Instagram, bitch. But, no, you know what? I find it interesting now, I think, as we're adults, to see how things are playing out. And I guess the roles that we play. Because we're both, what, the fourth, what do you call it?
Fourth estate.
Fourth estate. I'm finding it very interesting. I'm enjoying, I won't say I'm enjoying myself, but I can feel myself becoming more adult in my thinking processes.
What does that mean?
There's like a stage of adulthood you reach where you realize that someone is not adult or intelligent just by virtue of their age. There's a way that you go through childhood, like when you're a teen and you think adults know nothing. And then you grow past that, right? And you're like, actually, no, they know things. But then you get to a stage where you meet them in their adulthood and you say, and you're like, I have more sense than you. Don't tell me what to do. And it's not, no. It's not like, it doesn't apply to most people. It definitely doesn't apply for me in like most things.
Yeah.
But I no longer have imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
In a way of like being in a room with quote unquote adults.
You know, so this is my favorite thing about social media. So, like, a lot of people that you would have looked at essentially as like, oh, this person's smart, or like, a lot of them, like, you give them their phone, they'll cast themselves.
And they have.
And they have. Like, it's like, you're like, so there's some people that are just like, yeah, bro, you did that dumb thing. You might think it was 4 years ago. I've not forgotten. So, like, I'm not even going to.
I think, like, for me, that's one thing. It's also, I think also just working in the news or paying more attention to like news or interviews or asking people questions. And I'm like, please like explain your thought process on this, right? And they explain it in a way that I not only understand, but I'm like, again, like, I don't think you use both sides of your brain on this one.
You see, as you're saying this, I'm thinking of, I've forgotten who that guy was, the one who was shouting at you, who was calling you by your last name.
Oh, Giwa Osaki.
And then, like, yeah, obviously, these guys are not used to being asked, like...
It's a very simple question.
Like, what you're saying makes no sense.
But the thing about it is that, like, sometimes there's this pushback on engaging it in just, like, the thing that requires you to use intellect. Like, because there are a lot of people, and I say this to people all the time, like, what surprises you the most? And I'm like, I've been surprised by the level of intelligence of a lot of politicians that I've met, because some of them... faking it in terms of how they're not as dumb as they like portray. A lot of them, it is not,
no, continue,
it's not like willful ignorance, it's deliberate misdirection.
Yeah,
so it's not like I'm like, oh, I'm so smart. No, I'm starting to see how smart just some people are. But a lot of times, like, you think about the reasoning for certain things or what motivated certain things, even like policy decisions or statements, and it would be some random ass tweet or some random ass article. Like, some, like, what can influence these decisions does not have to be so complex. Like, I think it's because, like, when I was in school, there were just things that would be so complex that my brain would just go, like, when I was doing econ. Like, there's a level of, like, calculation and thinking. Where I'm like, no matter how much I look at this, I won't grab.
The most obvious thing in that regard is, like, the Binance thing. Like, that is clear. It's just like, yo, there's not that much thought going here. You guys are literally like...
Do you know I back the federal government on Binance?
When you say you back, what part do you back?
I don't back Bayon Onanuga coming on BBC and coming on channels and talking about something he has no business talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I back investigating. I don't know what happened with the exec, so I can't speak on it fully. But I do believe that when you have, like, there's too much. When you have an opaque financial thing like crypto, which I also, you know, use because...
You partake in what?
I used to, back in the day. No, but it would always be, like, criminals always take advantage of it. And when you think about the criminality in Nigeria, the insecurity, the terrorism, I think, and I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, mostly because Cardi B has been showing it's working. And I just don't see Cardi B coming out, Ribadu coming out.
I love the fact that this Cardi B name has stuck.
Bro, the person who said Cardi B deserves an award.
Yeah.
Because it's a sweet one for me. But I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt to think that there is some validity into the statements they've released. There's some validity into the investigations that they're leading. And I'm giving them that benefit of the doubt because SEC is involved and NSA is involved and CBN is involved. And I don't think they're going to do this, especially just based off of the working they've been showing recently. I don't think they're going to talk out of their ass on this matter like that.
I think you're saying that like someone who hasn't watched observed like the Nigerian government in action. I think...
No, I think the Nigerian government in action is like the other side of it. It's the sensationalism. It's the Tinubu fine. All these things that don't exist. All these media aids. Tinubu, first of all, needs to clean house. He should take his APC broom and sweep at least half of his media aids to the curbs. He has to get rid of some.
Possibly.
Ugdio Olusegun can go. Who is that? All he does is repost what Bio says or what Ajuri says. Why is he...
But you can also... So the thing, again, so we were talking about this, like, shady thing. And it's also, like, in terms of the power blocks in government, because you can't tell who is here on who's...
Who's here.
Say so. And that now also just reflects in the dynamics of, like, the governance.
It's
so
if
you're looking at, like, the comms part now, okay, Bayo Onanuga is a Tinubu person who was put there because essentially he worked hard during campaign, whatever, he's been loyal, whatever. So he's like, okay, we'll give this guy. But the real person with power in that whole situation is Ajuri. That's the person that has been empowered, like, to be in a position of power. Yeah. So you can tell that obviously someone like Bayo Onanuga has no respect and is not going to line himself up to, like, be in a place where he's reporting to Ajuri. So essentially, it's almost like, you, all of them are just doing whatever the fuck they want.
But then there's also Ortega, who's running the official.
Yeah, and Ortega again is also like, because that's a Sheyi, like, that's an ST.
I think so. Ortega is Bua.
Yeah, but I'm pretty confident the reason Ortega is there is based off ST's recommendation or ST's. Like, the whole, like, those media guys is really, he's the one that generally has, like, dictated that.
I feel like this is the problem of coming up on a very unpopular ticket and having to please everybody. I mean, it's the same thing we're seeing with our ministerial list of 40-something odd ministers.
I mean, I tweeted something about this this week, and I was like, this is precisely why this government is going to fail. Because there are two things that I felt like, if you look at where legitimacy kind of, like, would have played a part in, like...
Oh, goodwill.
Yeah, so, like...
I remember your tweet,
actually. Yeah, so looking at the subsidy, the removal of the subsidy, and then this, like, RSIA report thing.
Yeah.
So Tinubu does not have the moral standing, because those things, the way they were executed, they were not executed like someone who wanted to make those things happen. They were executed like someone who just wants to do things, like, for the sake of doing things. You cannot, as a person, you see, we're talking about, like, how many media aides.
Yeah.
You cannot talk about trying to shrink the size of government and have the biggest cabinets
ever
in the country's history.
Ever.
Like, where you're literally the one who was...
How do they fit into the room for FEC, bro?
Like, you're literally the one who broke up ministries into, like, three or four.
Tourism, creative economy.
So, information, like, yeah. Like, so how can you now come and say, yeah, you know, the government is too big, we need to merge a bunch of agencies? Bro, like...
We have more than the United States of America.
Like, it's a losing hand. And there's no, like, you just don't have the legitimacy to be able to say those things, because your actions have not allowed you, have not earned you that legitimacy. So when you say it, everyone is like, people want to support it because they're like, yeah, you know, this is what we need to do, or this is what, but, like, your actions are not in alignment with someone who feels like those things are important. It feels like you're just essentially doing things that have been. And, you know, the thing is, it wasn't even hard, because, like, Buhari was so useless. Like, if you actually, like just came in with...
Can you remember that era where everybody was saying, Tinubu is walking, Tinubu is walking? And I was like, okay, chill. And I didn't say anything, you know, especially when Emefiele was taken into chains. A lot of people... It gave goodwill. People were just happy.
Yeah.
Because one thing Mefi did not have is a support base. But I remember, like, the first
campaign. Yeah, it's a base of one. Not mentioning any names.
Honestly, I will absolutely give Ribadu your address. I just need you to know. But I remember the first time I really felt, like, doom and sadness is when that ministerial list came out. You know, there was, like, a first list and there was a supplemental list.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I first saw, like, the SA list, I was like, okay, some of it. I mean, I wasn't, like, super excited, but I was like, okay, maybe this is the team they're talking about. And some of these people make sense. But when I saw the ministerial list there, and to experience them in real time, Uju Kennedy just came out and told women, if they take your eye, what will we do?
This was best friend.
You know, and...
That's the person that's looking for your address.
Huh?
That's the person that's looking for your address.
Bro.
She walked out on you. I mean,
yeah. She said some thanks to me. She said some thanks to me that scared me for, like, a little bit. But then I was like, not that scared. Not scared enough. Not scared enough to not release this. But, you know, it's too many ministers. It's just too many. And the RSI report is so detailed. The white paper, they said Buhari did updated white paper last year or what. And that's what they're implementing. But even that white paper with the updated report, did we have as many ministries?
And the thing I think they've been silent about is, like, the loss of jobs. There's no way you're going to integrate all those, like...
Of course, without...
And
it's necessary, though.
No, that's, again...
Necessary.
It's necessary. Like, It's like the subsidy absolutely needed to happen. Implementation.
Or Cardi B's raising the rate.
Yeah, like implementation is fucking daft. Like done with no sense of like planning.
Thing. Anyways, I think we have gone completely off topic. Yeah, but I completely enjoy it. Thank you for coming to the Dirty Lab podcast.
And thank you for inviting me, for allowing me to come here, like, you know, in an official capacity.
Oh, I just realized we only did two facts.
Yeah, we did the third one.
We
the
have JFK one. Saved that.
Yeah.
You know what? Do you want to do that episode?
What, JFK?
Yeah, like you do your, because you say you know a lot about Kennedy. Yeah, I'm happy. So you can run it.
I'm happy.
You can run it, and I'll come and learn, and I'll come with my just opposition. And like I say, I don't need to say allegedly for you. Who's going to come for you? Costa Nostra.
RFK.
RFK is dead. Oh, you.
RFK Jr.
Oh, my God. You know who RFK Jr. reminds me of? This is the last thing I think about. That Awolowo that went to Big Brother. How did we get here?
My days, you are.
How did we get here?
Don't tell me.
How did we go? Okay. From Obafemi to this. How?
I thought it was going to be roasting him about the fact, like, because I think he had, like, he had a beef thing with Thatcher. Okay. And obviously, Thatcher's mouth is sharp. He's like, ooh, he's a damn about you, grandson. Like, yeah, they started calling that man grandson, bro.
Oh, man. Anyways, thank you guys for listening to the Dirty Lab podcast today. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you subscribe. You can find Maiwa at
MaiwaDoe
on Twitter.
Yeah, MaiwaDoe.xyz website.
Okay. And you can find the Culture Custodian on Instagram.
Yeah, everywhere.
I cannot tell you what his private Instagram is. I can only tell you that I once tagged him in a story and I got hate mail for 2 weeks.
You know, it's crazy. I saw you delete that. I remember that happened. So I saw you put it and then I saw you delete it. And I was like, oh yeah, they got to you.
I keep telling you that's my uncle. Bye, guys.
Bye.